Welcome to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Evert. Thank you for joining me this morning. So I've been a bit under the weather and I feel like I'm coming out of it and I'm kind of on the tail end, but please just bear with me. I've got this raspy voice. Now, my guest today has been on my show in the past, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and we are going to discuss his new book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist. So if you know you need some healing in your life, or you want to find out ways to transform your natural qualities into supernatural qualities, developing habits to help improve your self-awareness, or means of truly understanding, knowing yourself, this is the show for you. But before we get into that, we are going to get those Catholic tips on how to live out your faith in your everyday life with Daniel Campbell.
Hi, this is Daniel Campbell, director of the lay division at St. John Vianney Theological Seminary for the Archdiocese of Denver, where we offer classes for lay people. I'd like to give some thoughts on prayer here, the interior life. First of all, we need to begin with what prayer itself even is, this great weapon we have in the battle for our soul and the souls of others. So how should we define it to begin? Well, the technical definition is that prayer is the elevation of the rational soul to God, the raising of the intellect and the will to know and love God. In more simple terms, prayer is a loving conversation with Jesus. Quite often we complicate prayer much more than it needs to be, making prayer out to be some terribly difficult thing that we are going to inevitably struggle with for the rest of our lives, but in reality, prayer is a simple concept. Again, it's just a loving conversation with Jesus. That's it. You talk to him, you listen to him, you talk to him, you listen to him, just like any other conversation that we may have. Of course, who we are conversing with is quite different. It's God, but the concept is the same. And what can you talk to Jesus about? Anything and everything. There's nothing that he doesn't already know, but neither is there anything that he doesn't want you to share with him. It's like us as parents. We want to know every single thought, idea, image, desire, feeling, experience that our children have. The difference is that Jesus does already know every single thought, idea, image, desire, feeling, experience that we have, but nonetheless, he still invites us into conversation with him. And that is the interior life.
Welcome to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Evert, and I am here with none other than the Dr. Ray Guarendi. Thank you for coming back to Women Made New. I am so pleased to have you here today.
Crystalina, everybody is a none other. You're a none other. There's no others of you.
You are very well known for, well, just being very frank with your, well, just telling people like it is, which I love that about you, Dr. Ray. I truly do. And your new book that just came out, I have been so excited about it, is Jesus, the Master Psychologist. And is that not the truth? And I love that you came out with this because it needed to be done. And Jesus truly is the spiritual doctor, the psychologist, and people don't realize how much he can help with their mental illnesses, their way of thinking, and all the difficulties and problems that they have in their lives right now. And this book covers so much of that spectrum.
The only way that Jesus could not be the master psychologist is if someone says, he is a good man. He's a wise teacher, kind of like Buddha or Gandhi or Muhammad. That's the only way. Crystalina, if somebody walks into my office and for 1 hour of an interview, they make total sense. They sound wise. They give good advice. At the end, they say, I'm George Washington. I've come back from the dead and I'm going to run for president. Now, I know that that person is suffering from a delusion. They're wrong. It's a sign of serious mental disturbance. Jesus said he was God. He acted like he was God over and over again. So if he wasn't God, he was delusional. He was seriously disturbed. And if he was seriously disturbed, this book is meaningless because it adds nothing but the words of a guy who may have sounded smart, but he was crazy. On the other hand, if he was who he said he was, then whether I agree with what he said or I don't, or whether modern psychology agrees with what he said or they don't, it's irrelevant. He's God. He's automatically accurate. That's the premise.
Right. That's
the premise.
Right. Now, what Jesus said directly contradicts what today's psychology preaches. And you really get into that in your book. Can you, what are the contradictions?
If Jesus were in a counseling class and he said some of the things that he said, he'd flunk. They'd kick him out. For example, he said, when you do what you're supposed to do, just say you're a worthless servant. In one translation, he said, you're an unworthy servant. Now, wait a minute. What about self-image? Crystallina, we gotta feel that we're really special, that we're wonderful. What's this worthless servant stuff? What is he talking about? And then he says, thank you, Lord, that you have hidden this wisdom from the learned and the wise. Hold on a second. Is he saying it's not good to be smart? That you're just, the smarter you are, the more in danger you are? That doesn't make any sense. Psychology wouldn't agree with that. You got an IQ of 136. That's pretty good. So what does he actually mean by this stuff? I think that's the question.
I think that the day and age that we live in, Dr. Ray, it seems that there's so much pride and that everybody seems to know better than the way things God established and set things up for his people. And if we do follow the way Jesus has asked us to live, well, we are less than, we are weak. We're all of the negative things that they're saying. And people are really giving into that pressure and giving in to not really standing up to what they believe in out of fear of being rejected and not being accepted. And that seems to matter more than their faith.
I asked a priest once, for you, what is the most powerful evidence that God exists and that Jesus taught us? He said, the system works. And I said, what do you mean? What system? The church system, the hierarchy, the liturgy? What are you talking about? He said, the moral system. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, Crystallina, as a psychologist, I've seen tons and tons of studies that say over and over again that religious people, people who seriously and faithfully take the words of Jesus, mm-hmm. are happier, they have better marriages, they have less mental struggles, they are more joyful, they are healthier physically. Well, now, wait a minute. Why would that be? If our culture says that you people who embrace your religion are fanatics, you're extreme, mm-hmm. you need to get rid of your neuroticisms. Jesus says, you wanna serve? That's the best way to live. Psychology says, no. Meet my needs. If I'm served and I'm served well, I'll be more content. Jesus says, no. You serve well, and then you'll be more content. Well, the research, if you look at it objectively, it confirms that. But intuitively, you think, well, no, I'd be happier if I'm richer, or I'd be happier if people like me, or, hey, I have 27 thumbs up, you know. That makes me really feel good about myself. Social media, you know what social media is, by the way? It's a sticker system. You're a young mother. You've had kids. Maybe you've used a sticker system for your kids. Social media is a sticker system on steroids. That's what it is.
Oh my goodness. I love that description. People care so much about their numbers and their thumbs up and their likes. And it's so sad how they base a lot of their value and their self-esteem on it. And Jesus is literally telling us and going against most of what our narcissistic culture is saying, right? And he goes heads, but he did back in the day as well. Everything that our society is calling us, they were calling him an extremist. They were calling him all of the same things that they're calling us as Catholics today. And the difference is that he had this courage, and there's a very big difference between courage and confidence and arrogance, right? And there's a lot of arrogance in our society as well. And how do people overcome that, Dr. Ray, as a psychologist and seeing what's going on in our culture and society? What are things that they can do to counter that? Because there's a lot of fear intertwined in that, and it's really playing on people's weaknesses.
Crystalina, I'm going to borrow a line from Rod Serling in The Twilight Zone. Imagine, if you will, an anthill. You and I are standing above that anthill and we're looking down. I say to you, Crystalina, you see that ant over there? That ant is three times as smart as every other ant on that hill. You see that one over there? That one is revered by all those other ants more than any ant on that hill. See that one over there? That one is the most athletic ant on that hill. Would you be impressed by that?
No.
No. Why?
Because it's an ant.
Because they're ants. That's exactly right. We are so far above ants that their status in the ant world, their intelligence in the ant world, means nothing to us. As far as we are above ants, God is infinitely farther above us. So when we are proud of ourselves and fluffed up, because I'm smart, you know, or you know, I have 27,000 followers, you know, or you realize the status I have in the media world? I am an ant to God. It's meaningless. The only thing that matters is how we seek him. That's it. So as long as I keep that in mind, I can't get fluffed up, because it depends who I compare myself to. Yeah, if I compare myself to another human being, I can say, well, I got a 10-point higher IQ than they do. So what? God's going to go, yeah, like that makes a difference to me, Raymond. So if you keep the perspective in mind, it's a lot harder to be prideful. And if I, Ray Guarendi, declare Ray Guarendi is a special human being, Ray Guarendi is a really good guy, very worthwhile human being. Who am I? I'm just declaring it. It's my subjective judgment. That's not self-image. That can be shattered by anything that happens in my life. But if the God of the universe says Ray Guarendi is an infinitely valuable human being, now that's self-image.
That's powerful, right? And that kind of blows all of the, I think, the spiritual weapons that the devil uses with our self-talk, and we put each other down or we're putting ourselves down. That just kind of blows that out of the water a little bit of, who am I to God the Father? Who am I? What was I created for? And Dr. Ray, one thing that came to mind is that we so often, and especially women, really compare themselves to all these different women of the world, right? That's apparently the quote-unquote standard. But that's really the standard of the world, isn't it? It's not really God's standard. And we as Catholic women, we as Christian women or Christian men, if we're constantly comparing ourselves to the world and the people of the world, we're going to fail every time and we're always going to be less than. We're never going to be good enough because Jesus tells us himself, we are not of this world, right? But we're of heaven and we're made for greater things than this. And so we've got to stop comparing ourselves to the men and women of this world. But maybe if people are having a problem or a comparison issue, they need to look to someone of the church, of God's people, because we're God's people. We're not of the world. And if we look to the saints of maybe I'm having self-image issues, maybe I've been sexually abused and things are just all going wrong and I can't quite connect the dots in my life because there's so many things in the past that are left undone, to look to the saints for the answers, to look to God's people, to look to God himself, to go to adoration, to the Blessed Mother, instead of trying to find the answers in the world because we don't belong to it. What do you have to say about that?
I used to have a Bible study in a local jail. And the guys would describe some pretty hideous offenses, ugly, ugly stuff that you would look at and say, oh my, this is serious. And then I would listen to the guys describe their upbringing, the lack of family, the lack of morals, the lack of pretty much anything that I grew up with. And then I realized, if I'm going to judge them, I'm wrong. Because comparing me to them, just looking at the fact that I didn't do those things, I could feel myself pretty superior. But if I look at what they went through and ending up where they are, I'd have to say to myself, if I were in that situation, I might even be even worse. So that's the first thing. You got to compare yourself. You better recognize what you're comparing yourself to. And secondly, my pride. Why did Jesus reserve his ugliest words? I mean, he trash talked these guys that were the religious elite. Oh, the special, the leaders, right?
Yeah.
Why would he do that? I mean, these guys were trying to follow the law. They really were. And they weren't all bad. They many of them may have been well-intentioned. Why did he do this to them? It must be because spiritual pride says, I am not only better than you, but I am far better than you in God's eyes. That is the evil of spiritual pride. It's one thing for me to say, Crystalina, you know, if we went in the gym and we lifted weights, I could outlift you. I'm better than you pushing up a bench press. And you'd look at me and you'd say, well, that's fine with you, Ray, but I'm not really all that interested in physical strength. But if I say, you know, Crystalina, you must understand that on the spiritual IQ scale, I'm so far above you. Now, I may not blatantly say that, but if I think it, if I feel it, if I intuit it, then Jesus is really going to tell me how far off I am. Way, way off.
So many people do that, though, Dr. Ray. When someone does come at you like that, what should the proper response be? Honestly, when someone's attacking you in that way and they have this grandiose image of themselves, and spiritually of themselves, what is the proper response?
You have to be very mature about it. You say something like, I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever bounces off me and sticks on you, no reversies. That's a good one. How about twinkle, twinkle, little star, what you say is what you are. Okay, no. All right. That maybe something better than that. All right. All right.
I'll tell my 4-year-old, I promise.
Okay. Yeah. You know what our prayer should be? You know, Jesus said, you must be like a little child. Wait a minute. Who wants to be like a little child?
Right.
Little children aren't very smart. They can't control anything. Come on, your little four-year-old has no leverage about anything. He doesn't have possessions other than what you give him. So what does he mean to be like a little child? Well, for example, if your husband takes that four-year-old and throws him up in the air, right? The old game of catch. That four-year-old squeals in delight, right? Because he knows daddy's going to catch him coming back down, right?
Yes. Again, right? That's what I hear.
100%
yes.
Trust.
Yes.
If somebody takes me and throws me up in the air, I'm freaking out.
Absolutely.
Yes. So the four-year-old, the child is complete trust. And the trust, when it is leveled at somebody completely trustworthy, like God, is well-aimed. Four-year-olds don't have any leverage. They have to depend upon everybody around them to survive. God says, depend upon me to survive. There's where your survival comes from. Okay, so four-year-olds have to depend upon everybody else. You know what else four-year-olds do? They don't stay mad. You ever notice that?
It's true.
When's the last time your four-year-old came up to you and said, hey, Mom, you know, you said something to me 7 weeks ago, and I'll tell you, I've never forgotten it. I mean, you made me so mad, Mom. I'm just bitter, Mom, and I don't know how to get over it. When's the last time your four-year-old said that?
Never. Although, Dr. Ray, I will say I accidentally shot my four-year-old in the face with a Nerf gun because I was fiddling with it, and it was broken, and literally, it must have happened 6 months ago, and it actually hit him in the face, right? To this day, he sees a Nerf gun. He's like, Mom, you hit me in the face with a bullet, with the gun, with the Nerf gun. Like, it's something I feel he's going to literally be talking about when he's 30 years old to a counselor. Just like you said, I'm sorry.
But here's the difference. He's not holding a grudge. He doesn't not kiss you.
That's true.
He doesn't not talk to you. He doesn't not eat your food. He doesn't say, get away from me. He doesn't say, I want daddy because you're dangerous with a Nerf gun. All he says is, hey, Mom, I remember when you did that. I didn't like it. But that's going to fade. That's going to fade. Yeah. So all of these qualities of little kids, God says, that's what you got to be like. The culture says, no, that's not what you got to be like. You got to assert yourself. You got to recognize you have rights, you know. Jesus said, he who humbles himself will be exalted. He who exalts himself will be humbled. And by the way, Jesus was very good at using sound bites. He was 2,000 years ahead of advertising professionals.
It's the truth.
He did. He said things that were easy to remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do not judge, lest you be judged.
ABCs, huh? Really, ABCs.
He who wants to be first should be last, and the last shall be first. It's all just easy to remember. So when he said, you humble yourself to be exalted, he doesn't mean you make yourself be a worm. He doesn't mean, oh, I'm no good. I'm just useless. I'm such a pathetic person. He doesn't mean any of that. He means know your position in God's scheme, and don't put yourself above anybody else. That's what he means.
Yeah, which is hard in our society because it's the complete opposite. Complete opposite, right?
Yeah.
But even me as a child, right, growing up, and just there was so much brokenness and failing marriages, and I just grew up thinking, well, I need to take care of myself. And if I don't take care of myself, if I don't protect myself and I'm not self-sufficient, then I'm going to be used and I'm not going to be used. And nobody in the world wants to be used. And when you are being used, you know it. And there's this protection, and giving kind of your will over to God is really giving up that control. And the only way people probably feel in the world and that I did is that you have that control and it's a protection. And that's how you protect yourself. And I've learned very differently, and God has really healed a lot of that in me. But people that are scared and don't believe or don't trust, how do they get over that, Dr. Ray? And I know a lot of it's past brokenness and their upbringing, and there's a lot of healing that maybe just needs to be, I don't know, taken place there.
It all comes down to thinking a certain way. And you got to ask God to help you to think a certain way. Let me give you an example. You said something, Crystalina. I was afraid of being used. Mm-hmm. They want to be used. 99% of how we are used and manipulated comes through words and attempts to alter what we do for somebody else's desires or best interests. Okay? Mm-hmm. Nobody has ever stuck a gun to your head and say, Crystalina, you have to do this. Nobody has ever said, Crystalina, I'm going to wipe out your bank account if you don't do this. No, most of how they've used you has been through words, mm-hmm. or various attempts to set up situations.
Yeah, mental manipulation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But you have to allow that. If you don't allow that, if you don't say to yourself, it's so important what this person thinks of me, and it's so important that they accept me, and it's so important that they respect me and loved me, so therefore, I better be willing to compromise some things just to keep them satisfied with me. Now, if you do that, then in fact, you're vulnerable. You're totally vulnerable. But again, it all comes down to you are a child of God. And that can't change. That can't change by anybody's manipulation or anybody's words or anything anybody accuses you of. When St. Paul says, esteem others more highly than yourself. Crystalina, all the ways you've ever been hurt in your life, all the ways you've ever gotten angry, all the ways you've ever had agitation towards someone or frustrated, all those different ways, what was that based in? What was the common denominator of it all?
Fear of not being good enough.
Yes. Somebody said something that you didn't deserve.
Yes. You felt you had to prove yourself, right?
You know, Crystalina, I listened to your recent interview with Ray Guarendi, and I got to tell you, it's not very good, right? It's just not very good. And I've talked to some of the people that are in charge of making these decisions, and we're really thinking about giving you a show maybe once every leap year. I think once every leap year, we're going to let you on the air, but that's pretty much about it. Now, I know that would bother you terribly. It could devastate you in some respects for a week or two or three or four or more. Why? Because you're telling yourself, well, that's not fair. There's other people who think I'm good at this. Wait a minute. Just 2 months ago, they told me how skilled I was. Wait a minute. I don't deserve to be talked to like that. You see what I mean? It's all respect. I'm not getting my due. And the Lord says, don't. You don't deserve your due. Even if what those people said is false, you still don't deserve to be recognized as quote unquote good or skilled as you are. That's how you start to change that.
You find yourself worth in things, right? In actions and things you do, and then the accolades that you get back.
No. Because that means you're still back to measuring.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what people are doing.
Yes, absolutely.
That's how they're doing. They're living out of that wound and that brokenness. And that's what they want to get out of it. Because it's almost like an exchange of, I don't know, goods, right? But not necessarily like goods you can hold. It's more of the value you feel or the worth that you're getting out of that. Because there's a lot of that going on. That if someone says something bad or thinks bad of you, well, they can't think that. And you're so scared worried because that's your value.
Right.
That's your worth in those people's eyes. And it can't be that. And so many people live out of that wounded insecurity. And I'm going to say, Dr. Ray, and I don't know if you're going to agree with this or not, I think a lot of people literally hate themselves and who they are and things that they've done in their lives. And they walk around with such guilt and self-loathing. And some people would never know it. They put on such a good mask and they put on such a good just front for people. But deep down, there's such wounds that they're so scared to address and they hate it. Because I remember I used to hate living in my own skin in high school and my lifestyle and everything. But man, did I put on a good show. And I think a lot of people today put on a very good show, but they just don't know how to get out of it.
It has been said that one of the worst psychological fears that people have is that others are going to discover who I really am.
Well said. We're going to take a quick break with our friends over at EWTN, and we will be right back. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Everett, and we are here with Dr. Ray Guarendi discussing his new book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist.
I had a lady call the radio show not so long ago, and she said, "You must really be a wonderful father." And I said, "You can't know that.
It's true.
All you know is what I say on this radio program. That's all you know. You can't know what I'm like to live with. You can't know how I raise my children. You can't know any of that. However, that's why we have such struggles when we see religious leaders collapse, because we look at these high-profile religious leaders and we hold them up by what we hear them say. So when we find out they've lived a double life or they've committed egregious acts, we're shocked. How can that be? I heard them talk. I know what they're like. No. You don't know what they're like. You know what you heard them say. Big difference.
That's huge. And people have a tendency to put people that are in the public limelight on a pedestal that they do themselves. You know, it's not necessarily that people that are in public put themselves. Some do, but I think it's our own persona of what we think that person is. And we kind of project that onto them, right?
One of the things that I've had to do, Crystalina, is that as I've been in the Catholic world, the Catholic media world, people give you a lot of accolades. They give you affirmation. They give you applause. They clap. They say things like, "The one and only." Okay.
You're never going to let that. Let me live that down. I know it. Next time I interview you or see you, you're going to be like, "The one and only."
Me and your four-year-old will both never forget that you shot us in the face with
this
Nerf gun.
I know.
So
reckless.
So as I get older, I'm coming more and more to the conclusion that's all meaningless.
Yeah, it's true.
It's nothing. Now, maybe it's because I am getting older. You know, Crystalina, this is as old as I've ever been. Yeah, I know. I had a birthday the other day and 60-some candles on the cake, and that was a piece I had, you know. So I tried to blow out the candles, but the heat kept driving me back. As I get older, I realize that's not what's important. That doesn't matter.
No.
All that matters is where I stand and seek God. People ask me, this is the last chapter in that book. People say, "What most puzzles you as a psychologist?" You see, you've heard everything. You've seen how wrong and evil people can be. What puzzles you? I said, the number one thing that puzzles me most is, first of all, people not thinking about the question of God, and take it further, Christ. But even more so, when somebody is 80 years old and realistically, they should hear the waterfall. They don't have a whole lot of time left on this earth. Why do so many of them not even consider or think about or explore or turn to the question of what's this all about? That's what puzzles me the most, because in terms of self-interest, they should look into it. In terms of just, you know, I don't want to be wrong about this, they don't. And I struggle to wrap my head around that. I saw a survey, Crystalina, it was fascinating. They interviewed a whole bunch of elderly, and they asked them, "How much longer do you think you have to live?" And no matter how old the person was, 85, 90, 95, 100, they all believed they had at least one more year to live.
Wow. Just assume that, huh?
Yes, that may explain some of it.
Why do you think they do that? Why are they so completely oblivious? Or is it out of fear? A lot of it probably is out of fear of God maybe seeing them and what they've done in their lives. Or what keeps people from even entering into that kind of conversation with God?
If it were fear, some of them would be motivated to get over the fear.
That's
fear
true.
Is a great motivator, and I don't want to be afraid of going somewhere I don't want to go after I die. That's the first thing. I think some of it is apathy. Some of it is our culture, which says, you know, you're a good person. You haven't killed anybody. You generally follow the law. You're okay. God's going to welcome you home. That's a big part of it. That's huge.
You know what that sounds like, Dr. Ray? That actually sounds like I've heard people say, and I think I actually have said this in the past when I was in high school. Well, I probably won't make it to heaven right away, but I'll probably just go to purgatory. Like I settled for purgatory and I was okay with that. And God, I don't even know if I could even set foot in purgatory the way I was living back then. But I just had this assumption in me, just assuming that, oh, well, that's just how it's going to be when we really don't know.
I oftentimes will tell an atheist or an agnostic, and by the way, recent survey just came out for millennials. This is under age roughly 34, 35. It said that approximately 40% of millennials either don't believe, don't know, or don't care about God. 40%. Now, what is it? What is it that makes people ignore this question? See, for me, that's the $64 gazillion question. Mm-hmm. Why do you ignore this? I think part of it is, have you heard the law of conservation of matter or energy?
No.
I know it. You're this verbal type. I know that. Okay. One of them is it's one of Newton's laws of motion. It says, a body at rest will tend to stay at rest unless acted upon by an outside force. A body in motion will tend to stay in motion unless acted upon by an outside force. We have spiritual inertia. If I have lived in a certain direction, pretty much occupied with my own life, my own wants, whatever, ignored God, really. Oh, yeah, he exists out there somewhere way, way beyond Alpha Centauri. I just have pretty much done this all my life. It's very hard to break that inertia. It is. I may be able to fool myself and say, yeah. I always say this to agnostics. I'll say, you better hope there's no God. But if there is, you better hope he thinks just like you.
I love that. That's a good one.
Because that says it.
It's true.
It really says it. I mean, God won't neglect me. He won't deny me. Why would he do that? I'm okay. I'm all right. I mean, what kind of God is this? And anyway, even if he did that, if he's that way, I don't want anything to do with him. I'm going to go to hell to party with my friends. My friends are all down there. It'll be fun. Why would I go to heaven?
I've actually heard that.
And that is arrogance of an infinite type.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. What causes this way of thinking though in the millennials? Honestly, like what's the root cause that just like slowly just, I don't know, it's like a weed that grows within them and it kind of just, it kills the spirituality almost.
Jesus said something that has always haunted me. He said, when I return, will I find any faith on the earth? Now, I don't know if he was being rhetorical or literal. I don't know. The young people are very, very much shaped by the forces that say, there is no God, do what you want. You have to accept these kinds of moralities because that's what we celebrate. Religion is for old people. I mean, the culture is so, so, so good at doing that. And they're growing up in a culture that everywhere you look talks and thinks that way. I didn't. I had some years of growing up, no computer. TV was Andy Griffith. There was not anywhere near the forces to undo what my mother and father taught me. Well, that's not true anymore. That is not true at all anymore. The forces of the culture are misshaping people's souls left and right. I now tell parents, if you have the ability to homeschool, homeschool.
How much of it is the electronics that they're getting at such a young age shaping and forming their subconscious?
It's the number one factor.
Yeah, I would agree.
Parents will say to me, what's one thing I could do that will probably hurt my parenting more than anything else? I'll say, give them a smartphone. Yeah. Give them a smartphone at 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Go ahead. That'll do it.
I allowed an Xbox. I was stupid. I'll say it on air. I was not very smart. And I allowed the Xbox and I put very specific rules down. And I've talked about this before. Dr. Ray, it's unbelievable the arrogance and they think they're in control because they're controlling this world they're playing and what it actually does and the changes you actually can see in your child over time. And I had enough is enough and broke the three rules I gave all of them. And I kept saying, and maybe this wasn't the right approach. And I know you're going to tell me otherwise, but I had
it. Stop right there. Stop right there.
I know I'm questioning myself and my parents.
Yes,
I know.
Don't do that. Don't say, I don't know if this is the right approach. Like there's some kind of formula out there. You're the parent, Crystalina. You make these decisions.
I threw the Xbox in the pool.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
I did. That was my parenting decision, but that was my warning time and time again, because you can't just destroy those things. And if I hit it and put it away to punish him, he just would have been looking for it incessantly because it creates an addiction in these kids. And I thought, you know, and I was really praying about it and I cut the serpent's head off and I threw it in the pool. And well, that was the end. No, I have not heard the end of it. It's been months and months. And still there is this, how could you have done that to me? You
All
know,
right. I'm going to give you a thought here, my dear.
Good. I want it. I really do.
I think you need to tell your son. How old is he?
15.
You know, son, it's time for you to stop badgering me about this. I don't want to hear it anymore. You have tried to punish me for a long time. From now on, if you say one more word about that Xbox and about what I did, you're going to write me a 500-word essay on why you're grateful to live here.
Yeah.
Every single time. So, if you're resentful and bitter that I did that, you better keep it to yourself. But see, here you just touched on something, Crystalina, that, and I know we're getting out of the realm of the book, but that's okay. You touched upon something that many parents now deal with, which is, when I realize that I went too far in a direction as a parent, and I try to pull back, I fear my child's reaction.
True.
I fear their resentment. I fear they'll get sneaky. I fear they'll hate religion. I fear they'll dislike me. I fear that I'll get the exact opposite result that I wanted. So therefore, many parents will say to me, I sure would like to get rid of X. Why don't you? Because all hell would break loose in our house. And I say, well, just give him the car keys then, because he owns this house.
Wow. Oh, it's true. I agree 100%. And I saw little things here that was it. And that's why I cut the serpent's head off. That was the only way to deal with it. No matter what was going to happen, I didn't care. It was better than letting that in my home because it opens up this world that you don't even realize. And they're very sneaky because there are free downloads and things that you don't even have to prove as a parent. And the door that is being opened that you don't even realize and the evil being brought on your home. It was horrible. And it wasn't even here that long. And the little things that I saw. So I don't regret it. Honestly, my kids will literally be talking about that when I'm a grandmother, I'm sure. But at the same time, it's something that just needed to be done and he'll get over it. But it did need to be done and I was okay with that. But still, Crystal, it is hard because of the ramifications. But
I will tell parents, if your child goes awry and rejects so much of what you tried to teach them growing up, you want it to be because they had to go over top of you. You don't want it to be because you stepped aside.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for that. That was fantastic. And a lot of mothers and fathers, if you're listening, needed to hear that. We need to show up to the fight for our children, and their souls are the most important things, and our own souls are. And there's a fight for it, and we have to show up to that battle. And if we don't, I mean, it'll enslave us.
The reality is, perhaps 80% of parents go with the flow of the culture. If you look at the surveys, you look at the ages that kids get stuff, you look at what they have, you look at their motivations, their materialism, whatever, 80% of the culture, maybe more, kind of rules the way parents flow, the way they roll, as my son would say. People like yourself, people who are trying to raise faithful, God-seeking children, are a small minority. That's the reality. And your children will look at all those other parents and say, how can all those people be wrong and you be right, Mom? That is a huge pushback on faithfully religious parents, because their kids are not blind. Their kids see all their friends and all these other people, and even your church friends who you think thought like you, yielding all over the place.
Yeah.
And you're the oddball. You're the weirdo. You're the Neanderthal throwback.
Yeah.
And the kids think it. There's almost no way to get a lot of them to not think it. They do think it. What you're hoping for, and here's the good news, you're laying the base, you're laying the moral system, you're shaping them so that if they reject it at some point, there's a better chance they're going to come back to it as they realize that the culture's ways don't work.
True. Very, very true. I feel like that's what happened to me. So you speak a lot of truth, Dr. Ray. You really do. Your book is absolutely fantastic. And can you please tell the listeners, and especially those that know that they do need healing in their lives, and maybe they're just scared to go there, how can they utilize this book?
The book has 17 chapters, 17 things that Jesus said. And in each chapter, I try to show them logically that this is the best way to live. And if dominant theories say otherwise, I'll show them how those theories are not holding up. If Jesus says things that psychology is now coming around to reinforce, because even psychology learns things, coming around to reinforce, and I'm going to show that too. So the whole book is geared to live this way and not this way, and you will be psychologically settled and at peace. That's kind of the theme. So,
well, who isn't longing for that right now? And I know so many people are, and just finding that peace as well that they just can't quite get. This book is definitely an aid to help you in your healing process, ladies. And if it's something that you are interested in, you can go to EWTN Religious Catalog or EWTN.com and find it there. Now, Dr. Ray, where can people find you?
My website's the easiest way, drray.com, drray.com, for speaking engagements, which are kicking back up again because the COVID response is trickling off. And also they can order, I have something like 17 or 18 books there regarding the culture, regarding parenting, regarding discipline, regarding emotions, regarding faith. They're all there too. So, and we have a new offer, Crystalina. If you order any three, you can choose one free. If you order four, you can choose two free.
Oh, nice. Right. And he has an excellent book on electronics and even electronics with grandparents, if that is an issue in your lives, which I know it is in a lot of your lives. So please visit his website, and his resources are absolutely phenomenal. And if you are struggling in your marriage, in your motherhood, just parenting, just today's culture, society, even in your own healing process, these definitely are tools that can help you achieve what it is God is asking you to do in your life. So please visit his website. And Dr. Ray, what is one thing that a person can do today to be on the path of having emotional, psychological healing in their lives towards Jesus?
One of the things Jesus said was, get the log out of your eye before you try to take the speck out of somebody else's eye. Pretty much most theories of therapy and psychology have said you have to have insight. You have to be able to see yourself. You have to know yourself. For me, I constantly ask God, will you please show me who I am? Will you reveal to me the things I need to see that I'm blind to? Because there's much I don't see. And the good news with all that, somebody might say, oh, no, I don't want to see all the dirt and the muck and the yuck.
Most people.
That's right. But tandem with that is that you are aware and convinced that God loves you anyway, no matter what. He loves you anyway. So that's, did you ever hear something, Crystalina, called cognitive dissonance?
I actually have, but please emphasize, because I don't 100% know.
It means holding two contradictory ideas in your head that cause distress. Mm. Example, Jesus says, on one hand, we are sinners. And if we pray to see ourselves, we're going to see how much a sinner we are. Okay, that's the one belief. The other belief is God loves you unconditionally and infinitely. Now, wait a minute. In my human understanding, if I'm a sinner, how can I be so lovable? Well, that's the economy of God. You can hold that cognitive dissonance in your head and still be at peace, because he operates out of different rules than we do.
Now, today is Saturday. And honestly, the first step in finding that peace within yourselves and with God is confession. You can go to confession. In most states right now, churches are open and there are confessions. So please make that first step towards Jesus. And it can honestly change the course of your entire life. You never know what God wants to do. And that happened in my own life. So I speak from my own experience. But to go to confession today, start anew, start fresh tomorrow. When you go to Sunday Mass, I mean, it could be a life changer for some of you. So go to confession and do not be afraid, and know that Jesus loves you, wants to help you, wants to heal you and make you whole and do great things with you. Dr. Ray, thank you so much for being here on Women Made New again. I appreciate everything that you do and know that you will be in my prayers. Have a great Saturday, everyone. God bless. I want to thank my guest again, Dr. Ray, for being here. And if you would like to actually tune in also to his radio show, The Doctor Is In, you can find more information about that at ewtn.com. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone, and God bless.
Right now, right here, you get the splendor of truth for free. Yes, absolutely free. The EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, helping you to change your life for the better. Forever.
I have never turned my station off since I found you. I just had to call in and say thank you so much for saving me.